PBS Kids opens worlds of possibilities for all children, thanks to PBS stations and viewers like you.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading.
Hi. Aren't trees magnificent? I love to be surrounded by them. They're so majestic and beautiful. And trees are one of the most important living things on Earth. They provide us with oxygen and shade. Their roots hug the soil and hold it in place. They drink up rainwater from the ground and recycle that water back into the air. And they make great homes for animals too. Owls like them because they can hole up in a room with a view. And since the owl's color matches the trees, trees make good hiding places for owls. For other birds, trees have built-in restaurants where they can dine on fresh bugs under the bark. And taking home a bite for the kids is convenient, since birds nest in trees and their family is close by. Sometimes bees, hornets, and wasps make nests or hives in trees, usually up high, clinging to a sturdy branch. And as a tree frog will tell you, there's no place like home in a tree, especially when your toes are like suction cups, so you stick to the bark and leaves. Just imagine how cozy a branch feels to a snake who can bend its body around a tree and slide wherever it wants to go. And to a squirrel who can keep its balance on the slenderest twig, a tree is the perfect place to grab a snack. Lots of animals depend on trees for shelter, safety, and food. But you don't have to live in a tree to benefit from one. What in your life comes from a tree?
I think medicine comes from the roots of trees.
Bowling pins.
A toothpick.
Oranges and apples.
The air we breathe.
A birdhouse.
Shade.
My violin.
Drumsticks.
Maple syrup from maple trees.
Chapter books, encyclopedias.
Chocolate.
An eraser because it's made out of rubber, and rubber comes from a tree.
Trees touch our lives in so many ways that people want to know more about them. Here's a scientist who leaves no leaf unturned when it comes to understanding trees. Her laboratory is the forest itself. Her name is Meg Lauman. And to her, there is nothing quite so mysterious or fascinating as a tree. She clips samples to examine individual trees and also uses them to study the forest as a community.
When I walk through the forest, I get so excited about being here. There are just so many things to see. The leaves and all their amazing shapes and forms and colors, the branches and the way they look up against the sky. It's just incredible to realize how trees grow and how they live, and I feel very fortunate to be a part of this forest. Oh, here's a good example of how useful trees are to animals. When this tree was standing, some woodpeckers made a home in it. When they left, some squirrels moved in, and the tree obviously fell over, leaving some of their nuts still in the hole.
Well, it's one thing to study the forest from the ground up, but Meg's particular interest is in the treetops, and the only way to get there is to go up. Way up. So she straps herself into safety equipment and climbs a special ladder she built to take her there.
It's a long climb, but it's worth it. Phew, this has got to be one of the most beautiful places in the world. And it's only up here that I can combine a love of trees with a very special kind of research on the treetops. We're now 75 feet above the forest floor. And we're in a place where very few people have ever been.
Meg's treetop laboratory is like a treehouse that has two platforms and a walkway. Everything is securely bolted into two strong oak trees in such a way that it won't hurt the trees and will keep the scientists safe. It may look kind of rickety, but it's really very strong, and to Meg, it's a dream come true. A way to discover the secrets of a world usually hidden from view.
The top and the bottom of the tree are really different, and it's very interesting to take a look. I just clipped this branch from the top, and you can see how much smaller those leaves are than these from the bottom, or the shade part of an oak tree. These small leaves from the top of the tree contain a lot more chemicals and are a lot tougher than these larger leaves that come from the lower parts of the tree.
One of the reasons Meg comes up here to study leaves is because something amazing happens in them. Trees manufacture food in their leaves. Plants are the only living things on Earth that can make their own food, and their leaves are the factories in which the work is done. Under the ground, the roots of a tree collect water and nutrients from the soil, and the tree sucks them up as if it's drinking through a straw. This nourishment travels all the way up to the tips of each branch and into the leaves. When the sun shines on the leaves use the sun's energy to help manufacture food. This is called photosynthesis. The food is then distributed to all the various parts of the tree. Then the cycle begins again, and goes on and on, keeping the tree alive and growing for up to a few hundred years.
Ever since I was a child, I have always loved trees, and I think studying them from 100 feet up has certainly made a very special difference to how I appreciate and enjoy trees.
scientists like Meg Laumann go to great lengths and heights to probe the secrets of trees. Their research will help us all understand how to maintain and protect one of the Earth's most vital resources. In a forest, you see trees in many different stages of life, from tiny saplings like these to towering giants like this. And some trees have fallen and died. But the life cycle of a tree doesn't end there. This book tells how a tree remains part of the forest long after it's died. It's called Once There Was a Tree.
Once There Was a Tree by Natalia Romanova. Pictures by Gennady Spirin. Read by Eli Wallach. Once there was a tree. It had grown for many years, and now it was growing old. Dark clouds swept across the sky. Rain fell. Thunder roared. And a lightning bolt split the tree in two. A woodsman came upon the broken tree and sawed it down so that only the stump remained. Soon, a bark beetle with long feelers settled in. The beetle loved the stump and laid her eggs under its bark. The eggs hatched and tiny maggots emerged. All summer long, they gnawed the tunnels in the bark. Winter came and they slept. When they awoke in the spring with long feelers of their own, it was time to fly away. But the tree stump was not deserted for long. With all the entrances and exits the maggots had made, here was the perfect place for ants to live. One ant brought a leaf, another a twig, and another a grain of sand. They cleared out the tunnels and made the stump their home. A bear approached the tree stump, sniffed at it, and sharpened her claws on the bark. The stump was hers, like everything else around. Even the ants in the stump were hers, and no other bear would dare disturb them. A titmouse flew down and landed on the stump. She spotted a caterpillar and pecked at it. Now the caterpillar was hers. The ants were hers too, and so was the tree stump. No other birds would come near. One rainy day, a frog found a shelter in a hole in the tree stump. Time and weather had dug these holes, which would protect others who also settled in. The warm sun dried the tree stump, and soon a new occupant had moved in, an earwig. Liking nothing better than the shade, he crept under the bark to sleep. A man was walking in the woods and saw the tree stump. He sat down on it to rest, and now the tree stump was his. The man thought he owned the forest and the earth, so why not the tree stump? But who really owns the tree stump? The bark beetle that gnaws tunnels inside it? The ants that travel through the tunnels? The earwig that sleeps under its bark, or the bear that uses it to sharpen her claws? Does it belong to the titmouse that flies down upon it, the frog that finds shelter in one of its holes, or the man who believes he owns the forest? Maybe the tree stump belongs to us all. The tree stump gets older and older. The sun warms it. The rain cools it. Soon, it begins to rot. Night comes, and the forest is cast in moonlight. What remains of the tree stump glows in the dark. Now the tree stump is gone. A new tree has grown in its place. The tree belongs to us all because it grows from the earth that is home for us all.
Do you have a favorite tree? A huge oak on your street? Or a giant willow in a nearby park? Well, I have a favorite tree, and it doesn't live anywhere near me. I first saw it in Vermont. It's a sugar maple tree, and once a year, you can tap into it for a secret that's very sweet. Toward the end of winter, when the icicles start to drip and the cold wintry snow melts into rivers, maple trees start to make sugar. The sweet sap flows down through the tree into the buckets of anyone who taps the trees. Maples only produce sugar for a short time, and there is much work to be done, like clearing paths in the forest and gathering wood for the sugaring fires. Families and neighbors work together to get everything ready. The trees are tapped by making a small hole through the bark. The hole does not harm the tree. A metal spout is placed in the hole and hammered in until it's nice and tight. Then a bucket is hung under the spout, and a lid is placed on top to keep out rain and snow. The sweet maple sap drips into the bucket. Maple sugar can only be made in Northeast North America, where sugar maple trees grow. And cold winter nights thaw into warmer spring days. Within a short time, the buckets are full and the sap is poured out and collected. The sap is brought back to the sugar house, where it's boiled over fires until all the water evaporates, leaving behind only the sugar, which we call maple syrup. During sugaring time in the Northeast, the fires burn in every sugar house. The steam evaporates, and the sound of sap bubbling can be heard. At the top of each sugar house is a cupola, or vent, and clouds of steam escape into the frosty cold air. When the syrup reaches the right temperature, the sugar maker checks the consistency of the syrup by dipping a metal scoop into the boiling liquid. If the liquid holds together, the syrup is almost done. Some of it is poured out, and its thickness is scientifically measured. This batch looks just about right. While it's hot, the syrup is filtered to remove impurities, and then it's poured into bottles that you and I can enjoy all year long. And late next winter in Maple Country, the process will start all over again. Did you know there were trees on Earth before there were people, or animals, or even dinosaurs? So if your interest in trees is starting to branch out, here are some books to leaf through. But you don't have to take my word for it.
Hi, I'm Peter Marino. I just read The Tremendous Tree book. It's a great book for nature lovers. It explains a lot about trees and how they reproduce or make more trees. It shows how you can tell trees apart by looking at their leaves. And throughout the book, there are all kinds of cartoon animals to guide you. The smallest tree is an Arctic birch. The biggest tree is the giant sequoia. It weighs 2,000 tons. How they ever found out how much it weighs, I don't know. Trees are very important. This book gives you some good reasons to protect and preserve them. Why don't you pick up a copy?
Hi, I'm Chen Li, and I just read a beautiful story about a friendship between a boy and his tree. It's called Red Leaf, Yellow Leaf. The boy tells the story of his little tree. Long before he was born, the wind blew seeds from a tree to the ground. In the springtime, the sun makes the seeds sprout. When the trees are big enough, off to the nursery they go. That's where the boy and his father pick out his tree. They take the tree home and plant it in the ground. The boy really loves his tree. After reading this book, I want a tree to be my friend. I'll plant one.
Here's a book that's really special. It's fun to read and beautiful to look at. But the best part is that you can almost sing the story. That's because it's a rhyme that goes in circles. It all begins with one tree in the woods. On this tree there is a bough. On this bough there is a twig. On this twig there is a nest. In this nest there is a bird. In the end there is a little boy who plants an acorn in the ground. This is a wonderful story with pretty pictures. Try reading it or singing it to a friend. I'm Michelle, recommending The Tree in the Wood.
Trees by Harry Bain. Trees are the kindest things I know. They do no harm, they simply grow and spread a shade for sleepy cows and gather birds among their boughs. They give us fruit in leaves above and wood to make our houses of, and leaves to burn on Halloween, and in the spring, new buds of green. They are the first when day's begun to touch the beams of morning sun. They are the last to hold the light when evening changes into night. And when a moon floats on the sky, they hum a drowsy lullaby of sleepy children long ago. Trees are the kindest things I know. Just look at this acorn. It is amazing to me that this tiny seed holds all the promise of what an oak tree can be. Well, one day, your branches will be full of life, and your leaves will sweeten the air we breathe. We're all counting on you. I'll see you next time. I'll see you too. Today's Reading Rainbow books are Once There Was a Tree by Natalia Romanova. Pictures by Gennady Spirin, published by Dial Books for Young Readers, a division of Penguin Books USA Incorporated. The Tremendous Tree Book by Barbara Brenner and May Garalick. Illustrated by Fred Brenner. Published by Boyd's Mills Press Incorporated. Red Leaf, Yellow Leaf by Lois Ehlert. Published by Harcourt Brace and Company. The Tree in the Wood, adapted and illustrated by Christopher Manson, published by North South Books, Incorporated.